15. Leon Cartwright moved toward the entrance sphincter. "You had better disappear for a while," he said to Bentley. "I'll talk to Varric." Schaefer gave rapid instructions. A group of corpsmen came hurrying up, accompanied by a handful of directorate officials. "It isn't really worth it," Schaefer said to Cartwright. "He might as well stay here. He can't leave the resort, and Varric knows he's here. We might as well get this thrashed out." "Varric can't just walk in here?" Bentley asked helplessly. "Of course," Cartwright answered. "This is a public resort. He's not an assassin. He's an ordinary citizen." "Do you mind being present?" Schaefer asked Bentley. "It may be difficult." "I'll stay," Bentley said. Varric and his small group pushed slowly through the wide entrance sphincter. Removing their suits, they glanced cautiously around. "Hello, Varric," Cartwright said. The two of them shook hands. "Come on inside and have a cup of coffee. We were eating."
"Thanks," Varric answered. "Yes, if you don't mind."
He looked haggard but calm. His voice was low. He followed Cartwright obediently up the corridor toward the dining room.
"You know, don't you, that Peleg has left?"
"I know," Cartwright said. "He's heading out toward John Preston's ship." The others followed after the two of them as they entered the dining room and seated themselves. Macmillan's had cleared the table. They rapidly reset cups and saucers. Bentley seated himself beside Rita O'Neill at the far end of the table from Varric. Varric saw him, but he gave no sign beyond a momentary flicker of recognition. Schaefer, the other corpsmen and directorate officials, took seats in the background and listened and watched respectfully.
"I suppose he'll find it," Varric murmured. "When I left Farben, he was already 39 astronomical units out. I checked with the IPDIC monitor."
"Thanks." He accepted black coffee and sipped it with relief.
"A hell of a lot has happened today."
"What would Moore do if he got hold of Preston's material?" Cartwright asked. "You know him better than I do."
"It's hard to say. Moore was always a lone wolf. He was in it for himself. I provided him with materials, and he worked away on his projects. He's brilliant."
"I got that impression. Didn't he engineer the whole Peleg project?"
"It was all his idea. I went out and hired him. I knew he was good. I didn't try to tell him what to do."
Eleanor Stevens had come quietly into the dining room. She stood, nervous and uncertain, her small, thin hands clasped tightly together. After a moment of anxious indecision, she slipped into a seat in the dim recesses of the room and watched, wide-eyed, a demure and terrified shape half lost in the shadows.
"I wondered where you went," Varric said to her. "You beat me here by..."
He examined his watch.
"Only a few minutes."
"Will Moore go back to you if he gets what he wants?" Cartwright asked.
"I doubt it. There wouldn't be any real reason."
"His oath?"
"He never worried about that sort of thing."
Varric's deep-set eyes strayed vaguely.
"It seems to be the fashion among the bright young men. I suppose oaths don't seem as important as they did once."
Bentley said nothing. Under his fingers, his hand weapon was cold and moist with perspiration. His coffee cooled beside him, untouched. Rita O'Neill smoked convulsively, stubbed her cigarette out, lit another, and then stubbed out that. "Are you going to call a second challenge convention?" Cartwright asked Varric.
"Oh, I don't know. Not for a while."
Varric made an intricate pyramid with his massive hands, studied it, then dissolved it back into individual fingers. He gazed absently around the dining room.
I don't remember this place. It's directorate property, isn't it?
Schaefer answered. We always arrange something in advance. You'll recall the Interplan station we fixed for you outside Mars. That was constructed during Robinson's reign.
Robinson, Varric mused cloudily. I remember him. God, that was 10 years ago. Has it really been that long?
Why did you come here? Rita O'Neill's voice cracked out. Varric's shaggy eyebrows pulled together in a weary frown.
He didn't know Rita, obviously.
He turned to Cartwright for an explanation.
My niece, Cartwright said.
He introduced them. Rita glared down at her coffee cup and said nothing. Her lips turned white, and she clenched her fists until Varric forgot her, and went back to pyramiding his fingers and brooding.
Of course, Varric said finally. I don't know what Bentley has told you. I suppose you understand my setup by now.
What Bentley didn't tell me orally, Schaefer scanned, Cartwright answered.
Varric muttered obscurely. Then you know all I have to say by way of explanation.
He finished.
He raised his massive head. Can I take that for granted?
Yes, Cartwright said, nodding. Of course.
I don't intend to bring in anything to do with Herb Moore. As far as I'm concerned, that's over and finished.
Varric struggled with his pocket and finally brought out a massive hopper popper, which he propped upright against his water glass and napkin ring.
I can't very well kill Bentley here at the table. I'll wait until later on.
A thought struck him.
I don't have to kill him here at the resort. He can go back with me and I'll kill him along the way, somewhere.
Schaefer and Cartwright exchanged glances. Varric took no interest. He gazed down broodingly at his popper and paw-like hands. That really doesn't matter, Cartwright said. But we should clear up one thing. Bentley is presently under oath to me as quizmaster. He took a positional oath.
But he can't, Varric said. He broke his oath to me. That negates his freedom to swear on.
Well, Cartwright said, I don't consider that he broke his oath to you. You betrayed him, Schaefer explained to Varric. Varric reflected at length.
I'm not conscious of any betrayal. I performed the duties and obligations due from my end.
That's not even remotely true, Schaefer contradicted. There was a moment of silence.
Varric grunted, retrieved his popper, examined it, and then shoved it back in his coat pocket. We'll have to get advice on this, he murmured. Let's try to get Judge Waring up here.
Fine, Cartwright agreed. That's satisfactory. Do you want to stay here during the interval?
Thanks, Varric said appreciatively. I'm tired as hell. What I need is a good long rest.
He gazed around him.
This looks like just the place.
Judge Felix Waring was a grouchy, hunched-over old gnome in a moth-eaten black suit and old-fashioned hat, a heavy legal binder under his arm. He was the highest-ranking jurist in the system, and he had a long white beard.
I know who you are, he muttered curtly, glancing at Cartwright. And you, too, he nodded briefly at Varric. You and your million gold dollars. That Peleg of yours was a fizzle, wasn't he?
He cackled gleefully.
I never liked the looks of him. I knew he was no good. He didn't have a muscle on him.
It was morning in the resort. The ship that had brought Judge Waring had quietly disgorged Macmillan news machines, Hill officials, and more directorate bureaucrats. IPVC technicians came in their own ship, A steady stream of workmen moved through the sphincters into the balloon. Signalmen with tangled reels of communication wiring thrown over their shoulders wandered everywhere, stringing up IPVC TV equipment. Toward the middle of the day, the resort became a hive of noisy, determined activity. Motion was everywhere, figures coming and going with serious expressions. "How's this?" a directorate official was saying to one of the IPVC men. "Not big enough. What about that place over there?" "That's the main game room." "That'll be fine." Equipment was waved toward the entrance arch. "The acoustics will be blurred, but that's okay, isn't it?" "Not on your life. We want no boom. Use something smaller." "Don't step through the balloon," a soldier warned a work crew setting up transmission equipment. "It's pretty tough," a technician said. "This place was made to handle tourists and drunks." The central game room had rapidly filled with men and women in bright-colored vacation clothes. They scampered and played and amused themselves as the technicians and work crews laid out tables and machinery. Macmillans were everywhere, getting underfoot and blundering among the game players. Bentley stood off in a corner, watching gloomily. The laughing, gaily clad men and women sprinted back and forth. Shuffleboard was a popular sport, as well as softball and soccer. No purely intellectual games were permitted. This was a psych resort. The games were therapeutic. A few feet from Bentley, a purple-haired young girl was determinedly hunching over a three-dimensional color board, forming elaborate combinations of shapes, tones, and textures with sharp little quivers of her hands. "It's nice here," Rita O'Neill said in his ear. Bentley nodded. "We still have some time before they begin." Rita meditatively tossed a garishly painted disc into the middle of a flock of robot ducks. One duck dutifully fell dead, and a score rang itself up on the marker. "You want to play something? Exercise and enjoy yourself? I'm dying to try some of these things out." The two of them edged through the people and into the side gym, Rita leading the way. Directorate soldiers had stripped off their green uniforms and were tilting with magnetic fields, pressure beams, artificial high-grav steps, a variety of muscle-building equipment. In the center of the room, an interested group was watching a corpsman wrestle a Macmillan robot. "Very helpful," Bentley said grimly.
"Oh, this is a wonderful place. Don't you think Leon has put on weight? He looks a lot better since the Pellig business ended."
"He'll probably live to be an old man," Bentley agreed. Rita flushed.
"There's no need for that. You can't really be loyal to anybody, can you? You're only thinking of yourself."
Bentley moved on. After a moment, Rita followed. "Is Judge Waring going to make his decision with all these enthusiasts running around?" Bentley demanded. He had come to a raised web on which tanned figures were stretching out in the sun. "Everybody seems to be having a wonderful time. Even the Macmillans are enjoying themselves. The menace is past. The assassin has departed." Rita happily took off her clothes, gave them to a mechanical attendant, and tossed herself into one of the quavering webs. Low-grav counterfields released her body. She spun dizzily into the depths of the web and after a time emerged, breathless and flushed, clutching wildly for something to hang on to. Bentley pulled her to a standing position.
"Take it easy." "I forgot about the low grav."
Laughing and excited, she pulled away from him and aimed herself for a deeper section of the web.
"Come on, it's fun. I never realized before."
"I'll watch," Bentley said gloomily. The woman's lithe body disappeared for a time. The web vibrated and bounced. Eventually she emerged to the surface and lay stretched languidly out, the artificial sun gleaming from her perspiring back and shoulders. Closing her eyes, she yawned gratefully.
"It's good to rest," she murmured drowsily.
This is the place for it, Bentley paraphrased Varric. If you have nothing else on your mind. There was no answer. Rita was asleep. Bentley stood with his hands in his pockets, surrounded by a blur of joyful color and motion. Laughing people romped by him. Ceaseless games were started and restarted. In a corner, Leon Cartwright was talking with a barrel-chested, grim-faced man. Harry Tate, president of the Interplan Visual Industries Corporation, was congratulating Cartwright on his successful bout with his first assassin. Bentley gazed at the two of them until they separated. Finally, he turned away from the webs and found himself facing Eleanor Stevens. "Who is she?" Eleanor asked in a bright, clipped voice. "Cartwright's niece. Have you known her very long?"
"I just met her."
"She's pretty. She's older than I, isn't she?" Eleanor's small face was rigid as metal. She smiled up at him like a merry tin doll. "She must be 30 at least."
"Not quite," Bentley said. Eleanor shrugged.
"It doesn't matter."
She started away suddenly. After a moment, Bentley warily followed.
"Want a drink?" she said over her shoulder. "It's so damn hot in here. All the yelling gives me a headache."
"No, thanks," Bentley said, as Eleanor hastily scooped a martini from a wall tray. "I want to stay sober." Eleanor strolled along, turning the tall glass this way and that between her thin fingers.
"They're about to start. They're going to let that stupid old goat decide."
"I know," Bentley said listlessly.
"He hardly knows what's going on. Varric pulled the wool over his eyes at the convention. He'll do it again. Has there been any news about Moore?"
"Itvic has their screen set up here for Cartwright's use. Varric doesn't care. He didn't interfere."
"What does it show?"
"I don't know. I haven't bothered to look."
Bentley came to a halt. Through a half-open door, he had caught a glimpse of a table and chairs, ashtrays, recording instruments. "Is that... that's the room they set up." Suddenly, Eleanor gave a cry of terror.
"Ted, please get me out of here!"
Rhys Varric had moved past the door of the room. "He knows," Eleanor said icily, as she pushed aimlessly among the laughing people. "I came to warn you, remember? Ted, he knows."
"Too bad," Bentley said vaguely.
"Don't you care?"
"I'm sorry," Bentley said. "There's nothing I can do to Rhys Varric. If there was, I suppose I'd do it." "Maybe not."
"You can kill him!"
Her voice was shrill with hysteria.
"You have a gun. You can kill him before he kills both of us."
"No," Bentley said. "I'm not going to kill Rhys Varric. That's out. I'll wait and see what happens. In any case, I'm finished with that."
"And with me?"
"You knew about the bomb." Eleanor shuddered.
"What could I do?"
She hurried after him, frantic with apprehension.
"Ted, I couldn't stop it, could I?"
"You knew that night when we were together, when you talked me into it."
"Yes."
Eleanor slid defiantly in front of him, blocking his way.
"That's right."
Her green eyes glittered wildly.
"I knew. But I meant everything I said to you. I meant it all, Ted."
"Christ," Bentley muttered. He turned away, disgusted.
"Listen to me."
She caught imploringly at his arm.
"Rhys knew, too. Everybody knew. It couldn't be helped. Somebody had to be in it, didn't they? Answer me!"
She stumbled after him.
"Answer me!"
she screamed. Bentley stepped back as a grumbling, white-bearded little old man pushed angrily past him toward the antechamber. He disappeared inside the room and dropped his heavy book on the table with a thump. He blew his nose, moved critically around, examining the chairs, and finally took a seat at the head of the table. Rhys Varric, standing glumly at the windows, exchanged a few words with him. A moment later, Leon Cartwright followed after Judge Waring. Bentley's heart resumed beating, slowly and reluctantly. The session was ready to begin.